Hey there, and welcome. Today, we're doing a deep dive just for you, tackling something absolutely central to the global economy.
Yeah, something that often feels a bit opaque, maybe. Exchange rates.
Exactly. Exchange rates. Specifically, we're zeroing in on floating exchange rates, the ones you see bouncing around all the time.
Uh-huh. How they work, and maybe more importantly, what those movements actually mean.
Right. What do they mean for, you know, trade, prices, jobs, the whole economic picture, really.
And we've got your notes here based on a chapter covering exactly this.
So our mission, if you will, is to unpack these notes, get a handle on the core ideas, supply and demand in currency markets, why rates change, and the knock-on effects.
Cutting through some of that complexity to get to the key takeaways. Let's get into it.
Okay, so starting basic, what is an exchange rate, fundamentally?
Well, it's easy to just see it as a number, but it's actually a price.
A price?
Yeah, the price of one currency in terms of another. Like, how many dollars does it cost to buy one British pound? Or yen for euros.
Okay, so like buying anything else, but it's money itself.
Exactly. And it's what makes international trade and finance even possible.
Gotcha. Now, your notes mention there are different types of exchange rates, not just one single number. You mentioned nominal, real.
Right, that's important. The simple one, the nominal exchange rate, that's the one you usually see quoted, like £1 equals $1.30. Just the face value.
Okay, headline number.
But then there's the real exchange rate. This one's maybe more revealing because it adjusts that nominal rate for differences in price levels, you know, inflation between the two countries.
Ah, so it tells you more about actual purchasing power, like what your pound can really buy in the US compared to the UK.
Precisely. Then you've also got bilateral rates just between two currencies like pound dollar.
Sure.
But often we need a broader view, so we use effective exchange rates, or EER, that's like a weighted average against a whole basket of currencies from major trading partners.
So how the currency is doing overall, not just against one other.
Exactly. And then you can have the real effective exchange rate, the REER, which takes that basket average and also adjusts for inflation differences across all those countries. Gives the most comprehensive picture of overall competitiveness.
Wow. Okay. So several layers to it. Nominal is the sticker price. Real is buying power. Effective is against a basket. Real effective is the inflation-adjusted basket. Lots to track.
It helps to know which measure you're looking at, definitely.
So let's focus on the floating aspect. If the government isn't fixing the rate, how does that price, that nominal rate, actually get decided from moment to moment?
In a pure floating system, it's all down to demand and supply. Pure market forces at work in the foreign exchange market. Or Forex market.
Like any other market, really. Oranges, oil.
Pretty much. If more people want to buy a currency, demand, they want to sell it, supply, the exchange rate goes up.
And if more people are selling than buying.
The price falls. The government, in a pure float, isn't stepping in to, you know, prop it up or push it down directly.
Okay, makes sense. So who's doing the demanding and supplying? Let's break that down. Who demands, say, British pounds?
Okay, demand for pounds comes from anyone outside the UK who needs pounds. Why would they need them?
To buy stuff from the UK.
Primarily, yes. Mm-hmm. To pay for UK exports of goods and services. Or to make investments inside the UK, buying stocks, bonds, property, setting up factories, that kind of thing. Foreign direct investment and portfolio investment.
Right.
Also, if UK interest rates are relatively high, that attracts foreign capital seeking better returns, sometimes called hot money. They need pounds to invest.
Ah, okay. Hot money flows.
Yeah. And even things like tourism to the UK or people abroad sending money back to family and the UK remittances, that all creates demand for pounds.
And speculation.
Oh, absolutely. Huge factor.
Yeah.
Traders believing the pound will strengthen, so they buy it now, hoping to sell it higher later. That itself boosts demand.
Okay, so demand is driven by exports, investment, interest rates, remittances, speculation.
Yeah.
Basically foreigners needing your currency. What about the other side? Supply. Who's selling pounds?
That's the domestic side. People and companies in the UK who need foreign currency.
Why would they need, say, dollars or euros?
To buy imports from other countries. To invest abroad. For UK residents going on holiday overseas. Or sending remittances out.
And speculation again, presumably. Selling pounds if you think they'll weaken.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If traders think the pound is going to fall, they'll sell it. Increasing the supply on the market.
So it's this constant, massive churn. UK residents needing foreign currency supply pounds. Foreigners needing pounds demand pounds. And where those meet?
That's your equilibrium exchange rate.
Mm-hmm.
And because all those underlying factors, trade balances, investment flows, Interest rate differentials, market sentiment, speculation are always changing.
The rate keeps moving. It floats.
Precisely.
Which naturally leads to these two key terms, appreciation and depreciation. Let's clarify those in a floating context.
Sure. So depreciation is simply when a currency falls in value against another in this floating system.
It's weaker.
Right. It takes more pounds to buy a dollar, for example. Or, put the other way, 1 pound buys fewer dollars. If 1 pound went from buying $1.30 to buying $1.10, the pound is depreciated.
And that happens if supply of pounds goes up or demand for pounds goes down.
Correct. More sellers or fewer buyers pushes the price down.
That appreciation.
That's the opposite. A rise in the currency's value. It gets stronger.
So 1 pound goes from $1.30 up to $1.50.
Yep. Now your pound buys more dollars. And that happens when demand for the currency rises or its supply falls. Fewer sellers or more buyers pushes the price up.
Okay, clear enough. Stronger is appreciation, weaker is depreciation. And the immediate effects seem straightforward, right? Depreciation makes exports cheaper for foreigners, imports pricier for locals.
And appreciation does the reverse. Exports get more expensive abroad, imports get cheaper at home.
But what does that actually do to the wider economy, beyond just the price tags on traded goods? Your notes brought in the ADS model here. How do these currency shifts affect the big stuff, GDP, inflation, jobs?
Right, this is where we connect the Forex market to macroeconomics. Exchange rate changes are a major transmission mechanism. Global events hit the exchange rate, and that then ripples through the domestic economy. The aggregate demand, aggregate supply model helps us map that out.
Okay, let's take depreciation first. The pound gets weaker, exports cheaper, imports dearer. How does that play out in ADS?
Well, think about aggregate demand. AD is C plus I plus G plus XM. Consumption, investment, government spending plus net exports.
X minus M, exports minus import.
Exactly. If exports become cheaper for foreigners, they'll likely buy more. So X goes up. If imports become more expensive for domestic consumers and firms, they'll likely buy less. So M goes down.
So X goes up, M goes down. That means net exports, XM, should increase.
Yeah, generally, yes. Assuming demand is reasonably responsive to price changes, we'll come back to that. But if net exports increase, and that's a component of AD.
The whole AD curve shifts to the right. More demand overall.
Correct. A rightward shift in the AD curve.
And what does that usually mean for the economy?
In the standard ADS framework, more aggregate demand typically leads to an increase in real GDP. The economy produces more stuff. It tends to push the overall price level up, demand pull inflation. And it usually leads to higher employment, as firms need more workers to meet that increased demand.
So depreciation can act like an economic stimulus, boost growth and jobs.
It can, yes.
Yeah.
But the trade-off is often higher inflation. You also get imported inflation directly because the price of imported goods rises in domestic currency terms.
Okay. But you mentioned something, the J-curve. That sounds like it complicates this picture a bit.
It does. The J-curve effect is really important. It points out that immediately after a depreciation, the trade balance might actually get worse before it gets better.
Worse? How?
Think about it. In the very short term, maybe the next few weeks or months, people don't instantly change who they buy from or how much they buy. Trade contracts are often already signed. Volumes don't adjust immediately. So if the pound depreciates, UK importers are suddenly paying more pounds for the same volume of imports they were already committed to buying. And UK exporters might be receiving the same foreign currency price for their exports, which now converts back into fewer pounds.
Ah, so the import bill in pounds goes up immediately, while the export earnings in pounds might even fall slightly before volumes change.
Exactly. So the trade deficit could widen initially. That's the dip in the J. It's only over time, as buyers react to the new relative prices, foreigners start buying more of the cheaper UK exports, UK residents switch away from the pricier imports that the volumes adjust, and the trade balance eventually improves.
Tracing out that J shape. Fascinating. So the benefits might be delayed and there's short-term pain potentially.
It's a classic lag effect in economics. Adjustments take time.
Right. Okay, what about the flip side? Appreciation. The currency gets stronger, exports pricier, imports cheaper, ADS impact.
Okay, appreciation. Exports are now more expensive for foreigners, so they'll likely buy less. X falls. Imports are cheaper for domestic buyers, so they'll probably buy more. M rises.
So X falls. M rises. Net exports, XM, decreases.
Correct. And since net exports are part of aggregate demand, a decrease there shifts the AD curve leftward.
Lower overall demand. And the macroeconomic consequences.
Generally the opposite of depreciation. Lower AD tends to lead to a decrease in real GDP, slower growth, maybe even a recession. It puts downward pressure on the price level, so lower inflation or possibly even deflation. And it typically means lower employment as demand falls.
So appreciation can cool down an overheating economy or fight inflation, but at the cost of growth and jobs.
That's the usual trade-off, yes. Cheaper imports can feel good for consumers, but export industries and firms competing with imports can struggle.
Is there a sort of reverse J-curve here too?
There can be, yeah. Sometimes called the reverse J-curve. Immediately after an appreciation, the import bill might fall simply because imports are cheaper, temporarily improving the trade balance, before the negative impact on export volumes and positive impact on import volumes really kicks in and worsens it over time.
Okay, so these shifts have pretty significant, though sometimes delayed, impacts on the whole economy. But you mentioned a catch earlier. Something about whether depreciation actually improves the trade balance even in the long run.
Yes. The crucial caveat, the Marshall-Lerner condition.
Sounds important. What is it?
It basically says that for a currency depreciation to actually improve the trade balance, increase XM, a specific condition regarding price sensitivity must be met.
Price sensitivity? You mean elasticity?
Exactly. Price elasticity of demand. The condition states that the sum of the price elasticity of demand for a country's exports plus the price elasticity of demand for its imports must be greater than 1 in absolute terms.
Okay, sum of elasticity is greater than 1. What does that mean practically?
It means that the quantities of exports sold and imports bought must be sufficiently responsive to the price changes caused by the depreciation. If demand for exports is very inelastic, quantity doesn't change much when price falls, and demand for imports is also very inelastic, quantity doesn't change much when price rises, then the depreciation won't work as intended on the trade balance.
So if foreigners don't buy significantly more of our now cheaper exports, and we don't buy significantly fewer of those now pricier imports,
then the negative effect on the terms of trade, getting less foreign currency per export, paying more domestic currency per import, might dominate. The value of exports might not rise enough, and the value of imports might not fall enough, or might even rise. So the overall trade balance, XM, doesn't improve, or could even worsen.
Wow. So just because your currency falls doesn't automatically guarantee your trade deficit will shrink? It depends entirely on how responsive, how elastic demand is.
Precisely. It adds a huge layer of uncertainty for policymakers thinking about exchange rates. It's not a simple lever you can just pull with guaranteed results.
Okay, let's try and tie this all together then. We've seen that floating exchange rates are set by constantly shifting demand and supply forces.
Driven by trade, investment, interest rates, speculation, all sorts of global flows.
Right. And these shifts cause appreciation or depreciation. These aren't just abstract numbers. They directly impact the economy by changing net exports,
which then shifts the aggregate demand curve,
affecting GDP, inflation, and jobs. But crucially, the effects aren't always immediate. Hence the J-curve.
And the desired effect on the trade balance isn't even guaranteed, thanks to the Marshall-Lerner condition, which hinges on how sensitive trade volumes are to price changes.
It really highlights how exchange rates are this critical link between a country and the global economy, influencing so much domestically.
Absolutely. They're a reflection of global economic forces, but also a transmitter of those forces into national economies.
So maybe something for you, the listener, to think about is just how much these fluctuations matter in the real world. Next time you see headlines about the dollar strengthening or the euro weakening, or maybe debates about whether a country's currency is too high or too low,
you can think about the underlying demand and supply factors. What might be causing that shift? Higher interest rates, changing trade patterns, investor sentiment.
And then think about the potential ripple effects. How might that shift be affecting aggregate demand in that country? Are they perhaps on the downward slope of a J-curve right now?
Or maybe, is the debate really about whether the Marshall-Lerner condition holds for them? Are their exports and imports actually responsive enough for the exchange rate change to work, as theory suggests?
It really drives home how interconnected everything is. Decisions made by investors in Tokyo, or consumers in Berlin, or central bankers in Washington, they can ripple through exchange rates and end up affecting the price of goods in your local shop or even job prospects in your town.
A powerful link indeed.